You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hey guys, welcome back to All Access Pass. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR radio station. We are broadcasting to you from the traditional, ancestral, and occupied and unceded territory of the Musqueam people, also known as UBC campus. On our show today, we speak on issues and topics surrounding accessibility on and off UBC campus. The content of the show is thanks to the amazing work of the Access Collective volunteer team. So my name is Desi and I'm the Access Collective coordinator. And in this week's show, we'll be talking to the newly constituted UBC Disabled Students Association. And after that, for the second half of our show, we will be looking at the U.S. elections and how accessibility and the voting process has been. Before we dive into all of this, I have a song for you. This is Irrepressible Future by The Tourist Company off their 2014 EP Space Race.
Such wonder cannot be hid. Don't look to the distant future. We're living the golden age. We took flight, but we want more. This world has lost its charm. We need a change of scene. Start this race, begin it now. Fate lies beyond the clouds. We're never turning back. Everyone all together, we're building the highest tower. All into the boldest headlines. You'll never believe what's next. We took flight, but we want more. This world has lost its charm. We need a change of scene. Stop this race, begin it now. Big eyes beyond the clouds. We're men. Dum 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 d I've been.
That was Irrepressible Future by the Tourist Company, Vancouver's own. You are listening to All Access Pass. Now, we got a chance to sit down with the president of the new UBC Disabled Students Association, so we're going to let you guys listen in. With Eugenia, the president of the UBC Disabled Student Association, welcome to our show. Welcome to All Access Pass. Can you explain a little bit about what your association does?
Sure, yeah. Well, we're the first Disabled Students Association on campus, so our goals are to create community among disabled students and their allies. As well, we're looking to promote awareness of issues surrounding disability on campus, and we are looking to increase physical and academic accessibility at UBC.
Yeah, and I understand you guys just got your constitution, which is super exciting. So,
Yes. So
what exactly, like, made you, you know, want to get involved or have an association like this?
Well, I was part of a Facebook group called UBC Needs Disability Support, and it seemed like, I agreed with that statement. But it seemed like no one was really doing anything about it.
Right.
And from my own personal experience with access and diversity and the lack of sort of community at UBC for us disabled students, I decided that it was important to create something like this.
Right, yeah, for sure. I mean, I as well, like, I just see that there's, like, kind of, we have, like, access and diversity, we have, you know, services, but in terms of an actual community, it's really awesome that you guys are here and you're doing this. Now, was it you that started it, or was it an initiative from Access and Diversity?
No, it was entirely my own idea.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's hard to get things started sometimes, especially in such a big university.
Oh, yeah, you don't have to tell me.
Yes. And what kind of, like, when you were creating this the UBC Disabled Students Association, like, what kind of support did you encounter? Like, when were you like, yes, I can make a student association and there will, you know what I mean? There'll be, like... Like, there's a need for it, and there's also people that are willing to, you know, advocate for awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing you do when you want to start a club is you have to get 50 signatures on a petition.
Yes.
So I posted all over Facebook, all over my social media, seeing if there was interest from my friends, from my cohort, you know, grads 2019. And yeah, I had an overwhelming response, so I...
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So nice. I really believed that I could get this going.
So, like, adding on to that, like, what are some things that, you know, you want to go forward with in terms of, you were just saying your goals, like, how do you want to kind of materialize those goals and, like, yeah, like, how exactly do you want to, like, contextualize and act on, like, raising awareness on UBC campus, because it's a very, like, you know, broad and also difficult thing to do in a sense.
That's very true. Well, we plan to work with Access and Diversity so they can refer people to our association that need to find kind of community. Hopefully, in the future, we'll be big enough that people will reach out to us directly, maybe even before they go to UBC, and they can find the resources they need. Because right now it's sort of everyone for themselves, vis-a-vis Access and Diversity. You just have to do it. It feels like you're here alone and you can only do it by yourself, sort of. But yeah, we want to really help people get those resources that they need, find their community. And as for building awareness, we are soon to come up with a poster campaign, hopefully.
Nice.
That's going to be fun. That's from things, from our first event, we are going to have a board where people can write about things they want people to know about my disability. So not mine specifically, but their disability.
Right, but the idea of like bringing it back to the person themselves. And
yeah.
I think that's really interesting, like the idea of like creating a community and not only like being like, this is me and these are, you know, this is my varying abilities, but then also like this is the community that, there is a community that can support you and like,
yeah,
just not, like not only just seeing this like I'm a student with a disability, it's like I, you know, like I have a community behind me as well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then as well, you were just talking about you have an upcoming event.
Yes,
can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so everybody show up November 16th.
Oh, we got a date.
Yes, yeah. We have a date finally because awesome. We're finally constituted and we can finally rent a room.
Awesome.
Yes, yeah, so November 16th, that's a Wednesday. It's from 3 to 5 p.m. We will have food, free food.
Free food.
We'll have
good.
Activities, you know, we'll have... socialization. Anyway, the event is called Disabled Students Social, so it's just a way to meet other people who are disabled or people that are allies of disabled people. So that's the whole building community among everybody.
Oh, it's super exciting. And Kisa, you were saying that like you yourself also, you are going to school with a disability, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. I have learning disabilities, and I'm not afraid to say it.
Awesome. And do you find, like, you were saying about, like, you know, the social and creative community, did, like, you yourself, when you were at UBC, did it help to meet other students with disabilities and, it, like, being able to, you know, have that space to discuss and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very useful, not only to meet with students, other students with disabilities to discuss like resources that I'm entitled to or anything like that, but just to complain, you know?
Yeah, you need that like, sometimes. You just like a rant group.
just to rant, to vent, to spitball ideas, you know, to hear other people's sort of experiences with being disabled on campus, with access and diversity. It's really useful to know, like, you're not the only one that has been told, oh, but you do so well in school for someone with a learning disability. I'm not the only one. I'm sure many, many people can relate to that.
Right. Right. I think we were talking, so we've actually talked in the past before,
yes.
And we were talking about, and then I was also looking at your Facebook page, I think you have like a quote from Stella Young, and it was kind of
yes.
This idea of like having a disability is not always just a mindset, like there's so much more that goes into it, or the mm-hmm. idea that you can just kind of overcome it by, you know, seeing it as a challenge and then materializing that. And I think she says something like, those kind of sentiments don't materialize into a ramp. It doesn't materialize into actual, like, physical accommodation, in a sense.
Yeah, by telling disabled people, you know, it's just... It's something that you can overcome. It's something that you can... If you put your mind to it, you can do it, you know, and not giving these people... not giving us the necessary tools or the necessary aid for us to function in a world that's so overwhelmingly able-bodied. It hurts us, and having that sentiment of you can put your mind to it.
Right,
it's all
right.
It's, I think the quote was. Disability is just, I really don't know the quote.
Yeah, I saw that, I was just like, yes.
Yeah,
the quote is like, that quote, oh, yeah, anyway, you can see it from
the only disability in life is a bad attitude, yeah. So
problematic, in
yeah.
a sense.
Like, it's not something that we can just put our minds to and fix our bad attitude, you know, we can't, you know, put our minds to not being hyperactive, we
right.
can't put our minds to not having the sight, you know, we need accessibility tools to help us be in this world.
Yeah, no, I think it's super awesome that, like, well, like, that being said, like, having a student association to kind of, like, combat that large and dominating discourse, especially at UBC. Okay, so speaking on the association, like, you also said that you were, like, looking for some more people to get involved with the, UBC Disabled Students Association.
We're always looking for members, first off, and second off, volunteers, and also... I could use some more people in our executive committee for sure. We could use someone for marketing and communications because right now I handle the Facebook page and we could definitely use some more help there.
And do you necessarily have to be a student with a disability in order to be involved with the student association or?
No, absolutely not. I mean, if you are just someone that is an ally of disabled students, is interested in helping disabled students, and who sees our goals as valuable, then I encourage you to come out and help.
Oh, awesome. I think we were actually talking about it earlier, we were talking about the hesitance towards, like, getting involved with accessibility awareness, which, I mean, as well on this show, we have, like, similar, in terms of, like, outsourcing and getting people involved, like, just this hesitance with it. You know, majority able, what seems like a majority able-bodied community getting involved or having hesitation to, you know, advocate for accessibility awareness because of this, like, idea that they don't feel that it doesn't resonate with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people do not only hesitate because it doesn't resonate with them, but they also hesitate because they don't know how to be an ally and they don't know how to ask without
big problem with asking. Yeah, I think there's even just like a hesitation to ask, like even the idea of like approaching something that you're not sure about, like especially when it comes to like physical disability, or you don't want to come off as ignorant, but at the same time, like, there is an ignorance in just not asking at all.
Exactly. I mean, if you don't ask, you're never going to learn. If you don't make mistakes, you'll never get better. I mean, I think people are very scared of coming off as ignorant, of coming off as not woke, you know?
Yeah.
But it's better to just ask and, you know, ask in a way that's to the best of your abilities, and then you end up not coming off as ignorant, but as legitimately trying to help.
Right, and like a genuine
interest.
Yeah, and I definitely think that, well, with my personal experience, so I'm an able-bodied advocate for accessibility issues, you're allowed to make mistakes, but there has to be a sense of like wanting to improve and listening to the person, so to just not be scared, but then also like it's okay to ask questions and it's okay to get terms wrong, but you know, it's always just like asking and checking with the people that you're working with that's okay. Like as well, like building on that, you were saying like in terms of not being scared to ask, like in what other ways do you think makes a good like able-bodied ally?
Well, for sure, if you hear someone else being ignorant, you could try your best to correct them if it's safe and if it's if you're able to. That would be awesome.
Yes.
And, you know, just don't propagate these stereotypes about us, about our communities.
Definitely a lot of, like, wording, like for sure, like in conversations and on campus that I've had, for sure, like even just like certain words are like I realize that we use in our everyday like conversation that may be a bit, you know, a lot of like references to like mental disability when we're talking.
Oh, I'm so depressed.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so OCD, guys.
Yeah, like or yeah, like just full on just like referencing a diverse ability that someone has. And I mean, it happens so often in university talk, but it's just like, and you know, it happens, but you also have to check yourself a little bit, and like realize your positionality and all of that.
Yeah, you do have to realize, the privilege you have of using those words, but
yes,
on the other hand, you know, some of us don't care that much.
Right,
like,
right.
It really depends on the person who you're talking to, but of course, if you're talking to other able-bodied people, you might want to be careful about that.
Right. Awesome. So, we just wanted to conclude with that. Just a reiteration of the club and what the club does.
Yes. So our goals are to, what were our goals? I know this.
We have like a 3-point format here.
Yeah, I do, for real. Okay. Our goals are to create community among disabled students and their allies and anyone looking to get involved, to promote awareness surrounding disability issues on campus, and to increase physical and academic accessibility at UBC.
All super important.
Yes.
And very good goals.
Yes.
And as well, I know you guys are looking for new executives.
Yes, we are always looking for volunteers, people to help out. We're looking for members, and we're looking for executive members as well to help out with some marketing and to help out with events. It's always in need.
That guy's really cool and, like, just, like, a really nice, like, awesome way to get involved at UBC, I think.
Yeah.
Especially, like, with new clubs in general, like, there's just, like, it's exciting to get involved in a new club. There's a lot more, like, potential, I feel.
Potential, and it is definitely, it has definitely been a challenge for me.
Yeah, it's not easy. Definitely not easy. And you were saying your first event is coming up. It's this month. It's in a matter of days, actually.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Nice.
Or I guess on Monday it's next week. It's next week on Wednesday, November 16th from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. It will be in the Nest, room 2314, I believe. Let me just check if it is. Yeah, room 2314. And we will have food and games and all kinds of activities and opportunities for socializing, but also for activism. So anything related to disabled students, you can chat about there, and you can chat to me and our execs, and we'll all be there, and hopefully we'll have some people from other clubs there as well, to help people get involved.
Nice. And then as well, something to check out is their Facebook page.
Yes, for sure. UBC Disabled Students Association. So we will have our event page up on there as well. We post lots of articles and links to other disability-related and mental health-related pages and clubs. And
I just wanted to thank you for coming in. It's super exciting that you guys are getting started this year. And, yeah, I'm excited to see all the, like, what you guys do this year.
For sure, yeah. Thank you so much for having me in. And I also look forward to...
Hey, guys. After this short break, we will come back and we'll be talking about the issues that have risen in polling stations in the United States during this election. So we're going to take a short break, and you're going to hear a song by So Loki after our few messages. They are an experimental hip-hop duo from Vancouver who will be performing on November 18th at the Media Club as a part of the Discorder Magazine's local hip-hop showcase and fundraiser. What you're going to hear is their song. This is Little Ma.
Yeah, this is Little Ma. Discorder,
and magazine from CITR 101.9 FM
presents a showcase of emerging Vancouver-based hip-hop artists Friday, November 18th at the Media Club.
The lineup is comprised of some of the most talked about and should be talked about hip-hop artists in Vancouver,
including So Loki, Missy D, Romy, Something August, Spotty Joseph, and Freeman Young, with CITR's Crimes and Treasons DJing and emceeing this 19-plus event.
We the boys! Be sure to come check us out. We're Crimes and Treasons Radio. We're going to be hosting and DJing at the Media Club. Be sure to come check us out.
Crimes and Treasons.
For more information and tickets, visit discorder.ca.
Hi, you're listening to CITR. My name is Paula, and this is Pride Facts. I have some info on same-sex marriage around the world. There are 200 countries in the world, and as of 2016, only 23 have legally recognized same-sex marriage. The first country to introduce equal marriage was the Netherlands in 2000. 10 years later was Argentina, followed by Uruguay and Brazil in 2013, and Colombia in 2016. In Europe, same-sex marriage legislation varies from country to country. Denmark was the first country in the world to give legal recognition to same-sex couples in the form of domestic partnerships in 1989. Ireland, formerly known as one of the most conservative and religious countries in Europe, voted for the legalization of same-sex marriage through a public referendum in 2015. Same-sex marriage remains illegal in most Eastern European countries, and they don't recognize same-sex civil unions. Canada passed the Civil Marriage Act recognizing equal marriage nationwide in 2005. The trend towards equal marriage legislation since the year 2000 is cause for much optimism. However, same-sex marriage is still illegal in most of the world, so the fight for marriage equality continues. Happy Pride, everyone.
Scratching to get your ass in a bath and pour a little double bubble. You and me a double trouble, higher than Hubble shuttles. Cloud nine got me muddled. Get on with your best self. Think your legs done spoke to me. She felt like a mind meld. I felt the potency. I'm floating in your ocean sea. Boy in a hearse, I've been dead ever since you left your panties in your purse. You killed it on the dance floor, and I'm a man of few words. I'm about to write a novel on how your body works. Hell, I think I saw you first, acting on your worst. I slid up, wiped my lips clean of the thirst. As you slid into the splits, into the spin of your skirt, I cracked a grin like an egg. Felt like I'm gonna turn into a smart.
You let go dance for me. Your eyes so wide and entrancing me. Diners, let go, dance for me. Your eyes so wide, entrancing me.
Welcome back to All Access Pass. You were just listening to Little Ma by Vancouver's own So Loki. I'm here with John, our spoken word coordinator. So tomorrow is a rather big and uneasy day for our next door neighbors on the other side of the 49th parallel. John, can you guess what is happening tomorrow in the States?
In the States? There's some kind of election dealy.
Yeah, some sort of possible important election.
Possible.
I think I've heard some people talking about it, maybe.
Definitely some anxieties up here as well. I recommend people ride the moat by coming to our workshop tomorrow, yes. 7 to 9 here at the Nest CITR workshop, if you don't want to be stuck in the hubbub.
Oh, yeah, good idea. Counter that election stress with some workshop goodness. Mm-hmm. So with the last of Americans casting in their votes tomorrow afternoon, issues have come up with the accessibility of polling stations, not only for those in wheelchairs, but with people with mental disabilities as well. Okay, I am here with Emily McCarthy. She's one of our awesome collective members, and we've assigned her to research the accessibility in the upcoming U.S. election. Can you tell me a little bit about what voting and disability looks like in the States?
Yeah, so there are 35 million eligible voters in the U.S. who have either a mental or a developmental or a physical disability. That's the equivalent to the entire population of Canada. For the U.S., that means one in every six eligible voters has a disability. And even outside of voting, it's the largest minority group in the United States.
Yeah, which is pretty staggering. Now, I know you looked at a study Rutgers University in 2012 in one of the past elections. And like, what did you find with this study?
So the three researchers, Lisa Scher, Mira Adya, and Doug Cruz, they looked at the results from two separate surveys. The voter turnout rate they found with people with disabilities was 6% lower than those without disabilities. And that's really important to look at because that means 3 million voters with disabilities didn't end up voting even though they were registered. But what was really cool is that they found that employed people with disabilities voted at pretty much the same rate as employed people without disabilities, which really highlights how important it is for people with disabilities to have employment and how it can affect a lot of areas of their quality of life. Unfortunately, they found that 30% of voters with disabilities did have issues or hurdles in voting. And to compare, only 8% of those without disabilities had issues.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that something as simple as accessing polling stations to vote can be an issue. I think for some people who hear about accessibility issues, people only think of physical disabilities when they hear about challenges at polling station. But like, what exactly were the issues identified?
The most common problem reported was actually difficulty in reading or seeing the ballot. Understanding how to use the voting equipment, whether it was a manual or an electronic voting machine, was also a huge hurdle reported. And then people also talked about biases for people with either mental or developmental disabilities and poll workers not being trained correctly in understanding that if they are a registered voter, they have a right to vote no matter what. And kind of scrutinizing their ability or their intellectual capacity to vote. So 25% of voters with disabilities voted by mail in the last presidential election, and absentee and mailed-in ballots in general in the U.S. continue to rise in popularity. So we'll see in this upcoming election how many people with disabilities continue to vote from home and see if some of these issues are resolved by being able to use the comfort of their own home to vote.
Yeah, with this election, it's super interesting. There's been a huge push on social media with the hashtag #CryptTheVote. Like, who started it? What was the idea behind the campaign?
There's a group called Disability Thinking, and they're started hashtag Crypt the Vote, which is a nonpartisan campaign. They used mainly Twitter, but also other forms of social media to engage the disabled community, but also more importantly, the non-disabled community to think about disability in the U.S. and how it affects voting. It's a really great resource for those wanting more information on how to vote and how society can start looking at voting with a more intersectional lens.
Yeah, for sure. If you guys want to get in on this, this campaign is mainly Twitter-based, so you can do hashtag Crypt the Vote and get involved. They do have a Facebook page as well, which is Crypt the Vote, no spaces. Go ahead, like them on Facebook. So there is a niche group within the disabled community that often gets forgotten, and I'm specifically talking about those with disabilities who are incarcerated in U.S. jails at the moment. Like, and how are they able to vote?
Yeah, so a group called Disability Rights Washington, which is in Washington State, did an investigation in August, and they looked at how disabled people in jails have access to voting, and what people in prison cannot vote, those in jail still have that right, which is something that is super important because some people in jail and also people outside of jail don't realize that they still have that right to vote.
It's very interesting. Now, that's interesting that we look into that because I feel that it's often not really discussed. What is, like, the idea, what does jail look like for people with disabilities?
Well, they don't have any state numbers, but nationwide, 4 out of every 10 incarcerated person has at least one disability. So that's almost half the entire population of people in jails. So it's really important for people in jails to have access to voting, especially those with disabilities. And the investigation worded it, Washington jails are doing absolutely nothing to facilitate voting and voter registration. So it was really abysmal results. They found that about 3 out of the 38 county jails had some sort of policy to facilitate the process. So basically almost none of them had any process in place.
Right.
The good news is after this investigation came out, more jails are now putting into place processes and training to make it easier for those with disabilities to access voting, understand their voting rights, and how to register to vote.
So the law is there, the right is there. It's just a matter of getting these, like, processes in place, as well as... Well, yeah, and when was this study put out exactly?
This just came out in August of 2016.
Oh, okay, quite recent then.
Yeah.
Quite timely, hopefully. So just to end off here, what can people do for advocacy and assistance in voting?
There's several groups. So there's a nonpartisan coalition called the Election Protection Coalition. That's available year-round. It's not disability-specific, but they are there to explain the rights to every member of the U.S. population. And if you have general questions or if you're at the voting or polling station and you have a problem, you can call them. They have several hotlines, and they have hotlines in different languages as well. The ARC, A-R-C, is a disability organization serving those with intellectual and developmental disabilities. They have a voter support service. You can access it online, or they have an app, which is available for both iPhone and Android. And with that app, you can use it to report problems while you're at the polling stations, which is super important if you're frustrated while you're trying to vote. And lastly, the American Association of People with Disabilities. They have a presidential candidate Q&A, so they had a questionnaire that they submitted to both the Trump and Clinton campaigns, and they both answered. Their social media campaign, which is hashtag RevUp, R-E-V-U-P, was geared towards making the disability vote count. And you can find both the Trump and Clinton's campaign party's answer on their site, which is aapd.com, to help facilitate and help in your decision in voting.
Nice. Awesome. It's so great to see that there's this, like, social movement and push behind this, especially with so many issues coming up in the election. Just the fact that even coming to the polling station itself and the kind of attitudes that that are kind of countering this, it's really awesome that this is happening. So thank you so much, Emily, for doing this piece. We'll be waiting tomorrow to see the results of the U.S. election. Okay, so Emily, who was talking in the last piece, went on to interview Asher. Now, Asher lives in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and she is 33 years old with cerebral palsy. She registered to vote at the age of 18 and didn't have any issues registering, but it's gone downhill since then. She talked to Emily about the difficulties she's experienced in order to vote.
was able to get registered, but polling has been a whole different challenge. You know, getting to a polling center, not knowing if the polling center is accessible, not knowing how busy it's going to be, not knowing what their accommodations are, like none of that is known up front. And so sometimes like I'll want to vote, but not be able to because I won't be able to get to the location, or I'll think about calling too late and to ask like, what are your accommodations? Cause they're not readily posted. They're not like, hey, if you need accommodations, here you go. You know, it's not super well communicated. Mm-hmm. Sorry. The one that was the election that was most frustrating was 8 years ago when President Obama was first running, and I so wanted to vote. I was like, and I just couldn't figure it out. I think I had requested last election cycle, I requested an absentee ballot, but didn't. I don't know, my brain wasn't working and didn't realize I was going to need to have postage to mail it. Well, then I have to go find a way to help someone go get me postage. And I didn't have that. And so then the day of the election, I'm driving around with my absentee ballot, trying to figure out how to turn it in, where to turn it out, and if there's an accessible location for me to turn it in. I even called the clerk's office at one point and talked to someone and was like, I have cerebral palsy. I'm trying to figure out how to get my ballot to you. I have my ballot. It's all completed. I really want to vote. And they were like, we have no idea what to tell you. Like, they had no answer. They didn't have someone that could come get it. They didn't have, like, because it was that the place was downtown, so it wasn't like I could just pull up and walk in. So it was a hurdle, and I didn't actually get to have my vote counted, which is super sad.
Mm-hmm. So have polling like locations been different for you year to year? So like you don't know where you're going to be for the next like voting cycle?
No. I kind of gave up after that experience. It was really hard, really frustrating. And now I just like they sent me a form before the election saying, hey, are you going to absentee ballot? Are you going to vote via absentee? And I did. And this year, the hurdle is that I was hospitalized last week. And so I wasn't able to mail I had my postage, I had everything ready, and I wasn't able to mail it in because I was hospitalized. So Rachel is actually going to go with me tomorrow to drop it off at the clerk's office so that I don't have to deal with the Tuesday crowds. So there's always something.
Yeah. So have any years been easier than others, or is it anything improved?
No, I feel like it's been kind of this not well talked about issue. I mean, everyone's like, well, you can absentee ballot, vote. But they don't think about all the nuances. Like, I didn't know I was going to be hospitalized. Like, that was completely random. Mm-hmm. Not planned. Certainly, that almost never happens in my life. But there it is. Like, now I have this ballot that I, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be able to turn it in just because a friend's able to help me. Mm-hmm. But if Rachel wasn't available, then, like, once again, my vote wouldn't be counted. And this year, it just feels more urgent because of how intense the American election cycle is right now. It's very, very stressful,
yeah.
Especially for people who are of an oppressed people group, mm-hmm. So like myself. So
can you tell me a little bit more in detail, like, what were the issues when you actually tried to go to, like, polling stations?
Yeah, so not knowing... I mean, first of all, the anxiety that's produced when you don't know if you're going to be able to get into a building. A lot of places think they're accessible, but they're not truly, or they might adhere to, like, the letter of the ADA law, which is super minimal and not always helpful. So now I have a wheelchair, and so in some ways it's a lot easier. in some ways it's a lot harder. It's a lot easier in that before when I go to vote, I'd have to think about, is there going to be something for me to hang on to? What's going to happen if I fall over? How long am I going to have to stand in line? Like all of these questions, like I think about before I even go, because that's part of that process for me. You know, what happens if I fall? What happens if I get injured? What, like all of those things. Now I have a wheelchair, so I don't worry about falling so much. I just worry about, is there going to be an accessible ramp? Is it going to be, am I going to be able to, get to the polling, get into the station? Like there's just so many unknowns and they're not clearly communicated. There's like nowhere to go where it says like, hey, even a website would be cool, I guess, in my brain, like where you could look up your polling station and you could see a picture and could see the accommodations for people in wheelchairs. This is what it looks like for people who need assistance standing. This is what our accommodations look like. There's just no, so it can get really overwhelming if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like just the thought process of voting.
So when you, before when you actually tried to actually go to the polling station, what happened when you went there?
I just left because I couldn't fit. I didn't, like, there was a long line, and there wasn't anything for me. This was pre-wheelchair. So, like, there wasn't anything for me to hang on to. There wasn't, there didn't seem to be any organization. There was no sign indicating, like, if you need help, come here. Or anything. So I literally just was like, well, I can't stand in that line, so I'm going to leave. And that's what I did. Now I have the privilege of having my wheelchair, which makes it so that I can sit in line all day long, which is great. But there's a whole other host of issues.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if there's any... Are there any regulations, or like if you can't physically stand that long, or like what are they supposed to be doing?
I don't actually know that there are regulations about things like that. I mean, I've noticed in recent years, even the banks, like you used to go in and there'd be like those things that would file you in a line. And a lot of the banks have done away with those because it looks nicer. It looks more open, but from someone that's got a little bit wobbly balance, like I would use those things, mm-hmm. you know, like I would just touch base with them. I wouldn't necessarily lean on them all the time, but they would just steady me, when I needed that extra help. So it's kind of I don't think there's actually an ADA regulation about like having things like that. I think the expectation is that someone who's disabled has the adaptive gear they need. And for me, before the wheelchair, I had crutches, but when I'd fall, I'd get injured with them. Like, they'd bruise me, or I'd, like, jab myself in the stomach. So I can't actually use crutches, which is why we just skipped right over them again and got into a wheelchair last year. But again, that's not a mindset you think of until you're existing, like, in it, you know. Of course, someone who has balance problems will have crutches because they don't think through what it would be like to fall with them or like have to manage things in your hands and also have crutches, like have to walk with crutches. It's just not something you readily think about.
What issues are you running into now that you have a wheelchair?
With polling, not many, because I am doing the absentee ballot. My big issue this year is that I was hospitalized. Mm-hmm. And so I'm again into this, like, dependent on a friend, which I have lovely friends, and Rachel's amazing. Mm-hmm. So she's going to go with me after work tomorrow and make sure that it gets dropped off, and so that this year my vote can count. But if I were to try voting in person, I'd still have a lot of those questions about, are there ramps? Like, is the booth wide enough? Because a lot of people think it is, but it's not, you know, or I run into that all over the place where I was actually advocating for myself with one of the local establishments for a couple months and they still won't cave because they think that they're so accessible, so I just don't go to their building. I don't go to any of their shops because they're not accessible, even though according to the ADA, they're okay. So it's just a mind-bending thing. Question was, have I used any advocacy groups that are trying to make it better?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. And I guess I'm not aware of, like, I mean, I've heard of movements like Crip the Vote and kind of things like that, just bringing awareness to the different issues that are important to people with disabilities that don't necessarily get talked about. They don't ever get brought up in election cycles either. So but that's as far as my understanding and exposure goes.
How did you hear about Crip the Vote?
Probably through Facebook or Twitter. And I, honestly, it was one of the things that I was a little uneasy about because Crip is not a word that I use and identify with, but it was a word used against me a lot. So it was just kind of a growing moment for me. Like, some people really don't mind this. Some people with disabilities embrace this. So that was kind of, so it just piqued my curiosity because I was like, well, let me learn more about this, these people that don't mind it. And I think I think the work that they're doing is very important and very good, but that's about all that's the only thing I know around voting.
So there's a couple advocacy groups that have developed apps that while you're at a polling station, you can report problems or issues or access help. If you had like known about something like that, would you have used something like that?
Yes. Yeah. Just you telling me it is literally the first time I've heard of it. And that could be my own, not issue, but my own situation too, in that I wasn't really, I was raised with a disability, but it wasn't something that my parents really spent a lot of time on other than me getting surgeries and doctor's appointments and stuff.
What would you like to see changed for accessibility in voting?
I think accessibility in voting, I think it needs to be more obvious. Because I'm part of a people group who a lot of times we're not even considered a minority. It's not something, we don't have a hashtag yet, you know, except for in maybe small situations like Crip the Vote, but like, our oppression, our existence really isn't a big, movement at this point, which, you know, it's sad that things have to become movements. People have to become movements to get seen and acknowledged and recognized. But I think visibility is super important. So just being very open and aware of like, hey, there are people coming to the polling station that are going to have some physical limitations and it needs to be very clear how they navigate. But that's a systemic issue. That's not just a polling issue. That's a everywhere issue. You can go to one building and their accessibility looks completely different than another building. There's not necessarily any information on the website. You have to go through, like, there are apps for locations where you can report, and like, I do know about those. So, I guess just awareness by the people setting up polls and then obvious communication.
Are there things that people who identify as able-bodied could do that not necessarily like within the system, right? But things that you could do to help your friends or like if you're at a polling station and you see someone that might need assistance?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just having, again, it comes back to awareness, just this personal awareness of the people around you and noticing and not being afraid to acknowledge that someone might be struggling. Because I think a lot of times we don't necessarily know how to interact with someone with a disability because we are taught, maybe not directly, but indirectly, that it's bad to notice. Like you think about the little kid in the store who's like, Mommy, look, why are they walking like that? Or whatever, and the mom's like, shh, stop pointing. Well, the kid doesn't know that it's just about being rude. They internalize that almost always as like there's something wrong with that person and I shouldn't have noticed. So when you grow up like that, you internalize this idea of, oh, I can't look, don't look, it's bad to look. And so I think we just kind of over-extrapolate that experience a lot of the time. And I struggle with it, too, because of how I was treated with my disability. I have to really check myself and make sure that I'm not carrying some of what was put onto me onto my fellow Americans with disabilities.
What is accessibility like for people who can drive vehicles?
It can be pretty difficult. Like if I'm not parking in a parking garage, now my issue is that my car and my wheelchair is rear loading. So where before I got the wheelchair, I could park in the parallel parking and the closest parallel parking and walk in. Now, because I'm transitioned to life in a wheelchair, if I park in a parallel spot, someone parks behind me, I can't get my wheelchair in or I can't get my wheelchair out. So that also becomes an issue. So if it doesn't have a parking lot or a parking garage that's directly attached,
Hey guys, and with that wraps up our show for the week. I want to say a big thanks to the president of the UBC Disabled Students Association, Eugenia.